And welcome to the Big Web Show, number 124, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and with me today is Denise Jacobs, a passionate, energetic, and sought-after speaker, creativity evangelist, author, writer, lecturer. She's the author of the CSS Detective Guide, the premier book on troubleshooting CSS code, and co-author of the smashing book number 3, Redesign the Web, and Interact with Web Standards, a holistic guide to web design. And she has contributed articles to web publications like A List Apart, yeah, Net Magazine, Smashing Magazine, SitePoint, Web Standards Sherpa, and Microsoft Script Junkie. In fact, you'll be... Anyway, Denise, welcome.
Yay! Hello!
Hi, but we're not here to talk about CSS or any of that kind of thing. Today, yeah, we're here to talk about... what you rock the web and generally what you've been working on now. You and I hung out for a while on the other side of the world.
That's right.
Last month. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me about Rock the Web, which is at R-A-W-K, mm-hmm, rocktheweb.com. Mm-hmm. I should add that today's Big Web Show is sponsored by Thinkful and Mandrill. Thinkful and Mandrill. And we will be thanking them and talking about them a little later in the show. But let's get to rocktheweb.com. What's it about?
Well, first of all, before I even talk about Rock the Web, Jeffrey's got such a great like radio voice. I didn't realize you had like all of that depth and nuance to your voice. I'm kind of impressed over here.
Wow, I think it's just the mic.
Ah, well, you know what? Take what you can.
Okay. You know, I never listen to talk radio, and today, because you're in Miami.
Yeah, I am.
I'm in New York.
Mm. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's very cold, and I was taking my daughter to school, so I Ubered. I indulged, right, in an Uber ride where we took my daughter to school. Saw her in and then came to my office. And the first half of the trip, the driver was playing, it wasn't the Howard Stern show, but it was Z100. It was something like Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the money to, Howard Stern apparently is extra. But I haven't really heard that in a long time. And I was just listening to all those voices. Mm. And I asked my daughter, why do the radio voices all sound the same? Because they do. All the male radio voices sound the same. And do I sound like that? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying that your voice has a lot of depth and richness to it, and it's really interesting to have that kind of contrasted. Not saying in a bad way, but like kind of like don't take this the wrong way. But how different it is when you're actually talking to a person. Like, in, you know, when you're talking face to face, and then what it sounds like when it's kind of translated through a medium like radio or digital radio or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So wow. I just found it interesting.
People assume I'm bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. You've got a tall persona.
You have a tall persona also. And you're actually,
I have a tall person.
Yeah. Well, what's that like as a woman?
It's actually very interesting. And I think we probably hit upon this a little bit when we were in Tel Aviv talking in that cafe. But it's very interesting to be a tall woman. And it's, you know, being a woman in this industry, I mean, there's kind of a lot of levels. Being female, being African-American, in a tech space, and then being tall. And there's kind of all of these different ways that works together. The nice thing about being tall, at the very least, and, you know, being a woman is, there's been studies this where they say, you know, the tallest person in the room is automatically assumed to be the person in charge. And,
Incredible.
I'd be credible and, you know, the leader and all of that stuff. And for a long time, actually, when I was younger, I shied away from that. Most likely because I knew that people expected me to do things because I was tall. And I was like, I'm not going to be the leader just because I'm like the biggest, you know, you think I'm older than I am.
Were you dodging the work? Was it that you didn't want to do the work?
No, it wasn't that I didn't want to do the work. The problem is that I have a large streak of volunteerism. And so I would step in to do work, especially when it looked like nobody else was going to do it. I'd be like, okay, fine. Like, I'll be the leader. Nobody else is stepping into this.
Sure.
But you know, now that I'm older than, you know, a teenager, it's something that it's like, instead of shying away from it and trying to do differently, it's like I've embraced it. And I'm like, okay, I'm a leader. That's great. That's great. Like, what do we need to, what do we need to fix?
How did you decide that? When did you decide that?
When did I decide that?
I mean, what are the things we're talking about it with Rock the Web is the web needs your voice. And so what do you have to, I mean, most people think, nobody wants to hear from me. Nobody cares what I have to say. And, you know, there's a picture of you standing up at TEDx giving a talk to a silent and very intently listening room. So, Okay. So what was in your way and when did you decide, screw that, I'm going to do this?
You know, it actually wasn't, I think I was in my way. I think that was the biggest thing, because I talk about this a lot in my other presentations around creativity and stuff like that. And I talked about it in the Banish Your Inner Critic article that I wrote for you,
for
List Apart several years back.
But and you I think in Get Unblocked too is another lecture
Unblocked.
Of yours. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I talk a lot about how a lot of times people think that they don't know enough. And so they don't want to kind of get up in front of people, and you know, embarrass themselves potentially. So imposter syndrome, like I couldn't possibly be the person who's the authority. I don't know enough. I haven't done enough yet. And we all have that. Right. And so I think I had a lot of that, but then, you know, I did get to a certain point where, what actually ended up happening was people started asking me how to do something I knew how to do well, which was make soap. And, I was like, yeah, I can teach you. This was back in 1998. I started a small soap making business years ago. Yeah. And,
you were a kid.
No, I was, I was more than a kid.
You were a kid.
Okay. So I was in my mid 20s. Right. Early, late 20s, whatever.
We don't have to. These details. Yes. No.
Anyway.
You were young, instead of working for somebody, you were starting a business.
Right. I actually had left my contract at Microsoft ended, and I was like, let me try this soap making business thing. So,
wow.
So people were
saying, what's
in soap? Huh?
That's a big change.
I
started my career at Microsoft, and now I think I'll make some soap.
Yeah, well, you know, what I was doing at Microsoft really wasn't very fulfilling, and so I really wanted to do something that could feed my creative side. And so I started making soap, and then people would say, well, what's in soap? And I was like, oh, it's super easy to make. I can totally teach you how to make it. And then the next thing you know, I got people over at my house, you know, learning how to make soap. And so it was kind of this kind of natural progression where I came into teaching and training kind of naturally. And once I started doing it, it just felt so natural and so normal and enjoyable for me that I was like, I guess I'm an authority. I guess that this is just what I do. You know, one of the things that I do.
Are you an only child, a big sister, a younger sister?
I am the baby of the family, so I am the youngest of two. My sister's 6.5 years older than I am.
I think it's harder for younger siblings to come into their own with, you know, their own leadership potential, right?
I absolutely agree.
I'm the older of two brothers, and that's not the boss. My brother Pete led me as much as I led him. He was really influential on my creativity and everything else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was like a miniature parent in a way when we were little.
Mm-hmm.
I helped. So you just, as the older sibling, you just naturally help and you know, maybe mom's busy, so you teach your sibling how to brush their teeth or something. Mm-hmm. And that can make you grow into that kind of adult. Right. More easily. If you're the baby, then, oh, nobody really, you know, it's more of a struggle because nobody expects you to really, you know, take care of yourself. Of course you have to, and of course you do, but in the family dynamic, you don't necessarily.
You know, in my family, everybody, there is a lot of independence expected, I think, or encouraged or supported. I'm not sure which was which, but, you know, everybody kind of did their own thing. Like, my sister was really into art, and she did a lot of artwork. And so she would be kind of off doing artwork or working on some project. My father built experimental aircraft.
Wow.
And so there was always an airplane in
engineer,
the garage.
Engineer?
He had formerly been an aeronautical engineer, and then he went back to school and became an optometrist, but he never stopped doing the work. Like, he never stopped making. He started building airplanes, and he did it until he passed.
Like Miyazaki. That's so interesting. My dad's an engineer, too.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
Yeah, he built robots when I was a kid. I mean, yeah.
Wow.
It has a real effect. And your mom, what was your mom doing?
And so then my mom used to, back in the day, she used to sew a lot. And then she did macrame and stuff like that. And then she discovered sports. And she started playing volleyball and racquetball and swimming and stuff all the time. So there'd be a lot of times where she'd be like, I've got a volleyball game tonight.
Wow.
She'd be gone. They'd be like, okay. So,
that was not my mom.
No. So yeah, my mom's kind of unusual in that respect.
Yeah.
And I respect her tremendously for it.
Yeah.
So because of that, you know, like I was kind of left to my own devices in a lot of ways, and I love to read. So I'd be just kind of I'd go to the library and I'd come home with a big stack of books, and I would sit and read them, just go through them like, okay, next one. And I'd open up that one and great. And I'd, so, you know, I feel like in my growing up, I was very independent. I had a lot of self-initiative. I was in charge of getting the groceries when I was like in seventh grade. Like,
wow.
I was in charge of like writing the list. So
where was this?
Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Okay.
The home of Antioch College.
Ah. And mm-hmm. is that where you grew up the whole time?
Whole time. Born and raised.
Do you visit the Midwest much now?
Well, you know, incidentally, it's actually, here's a be careful what you wish for thing. Just a few months ago, I was thinking to myself, you know, I'd really love to get a speaking engagement in Ohio so that I can go and visit my mom. And I don't have to so I'm going to be closing keynote of the Society for Technical Communication conference in Columbus in June.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went back last year to visit my mom for the first time in years. I will be there twice this year because not only am I speaking at that conference in Columbus in June, but then I'm coming back to Yellow Springs because Antioch has the Antioch Writers Workshop that they do every year. And they invited me to lead a workshop on getting creatively unblocked.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. But back to this leadership thing. So,
yeah.
So one of the things that, having done the teaching and all of that stuff, I mean, you know, obviously that's kind of where I discovered I wanted to speak and everything. And then getting into speaking, you know, I got introduced to kind of the tech community. I met you and everything when I went to South by Southwest in 2006 after I met Molly Holtzschlag. And just kind of felt like, oh my God, I've met my tribe of people.
Yep.
And really didn't, I mean, kind of had this aspiration in the background to be a speaker, but again, had this like, well, I don't know what I know, and all these people are amazing, and, you know, I'd have to like do something kind of awesome before I could actually get up on a stage and talk about stuff.
I mean, now, but look at you.
Yeah, well.
You keynote all over the place, and you speak all over the world. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's
how do you go from, I don't think I have anything to say, to that?
Well, the thing is that I kind of just didn't know what it was. Like, I didn't know what the kind of the hook was. And very fortuitously, when I was at South by Southwest in 2009, you know Jennifer Hanen, Black Phoebe?
I might have met her at a party at South by Southwest, so I...
You probably do. So, yeah. So Jen and I were sharing a hotel room, and I was lamenting to her about how I just want to be a speaker, and I just want to write. Like, mm-hmm. Is that so wrong?
She said,
well, if you want to be a speaker, you know, what most people have done is they've written a book. And I was just like, girl, the world does not need another HTML book. I mean, like, you know, there, I was like, and that's what I could write authoritatively on. And she was like, well, I'm just telling you what my observations have been. And literally like a day later, I ran into Robert Hochman at the Great British Booze Up. And he was there with his editor from Peach Pit, Wendy. Wendy Sharp. And we got to chatting, and she said, you know, I'm always looking for new writers. And I was like, well, yeah, I could be happy to write something for you. And I was like, well, what? She's like, I have some stuff in mind. I have an idea, like one project I have in mind for like this kind of detective guide for CSS, like this way of like troubleshooting CSS. But it's like, you know, solving CSS is like a mystery, right? So it's kind of like it's a detective guide. And I was like, I could write that because I used to teach my students like HTML troubleshooting. I had like a process and everything. And she's like, oh, let's talk. And, you know, a couple months later, I had a book contract. I mean, I had to write a proposal. We went back and forth and stuff like that. But I did that.
Peach Pit's great at that. That's
Peach Pit is great.
Yeah, they gave me my start too. With,
right.
In terms of book writing.
Exactly.
And they're wonderful. I'm still in touch with those people. Is Wendy okay?
She's great. She's great. Oh, my God. So she is now writing paranormal romances, and they are phenomenal. So she's got a series. Like, it's one that's the gift of thought, the gift of time, the gift of something else.
These are like bodice rippers for the...
You know
one
what?
Person's
not,
alive and the other is not.
They're actually like romances for the smart people. Like, because she gets all like, she has like one great scene in the first book where the heroine gets together with the guy that she ends up marrying, and they've known each other, you know, they've had history and whatnot, and she like kind of, I won't say seduces him, but like they kind of like get together over talking about particle physics. Like, what? I was like, this is my kind of romance novel. Bring it on.
That happens a lot. You know?
Yeah, right. Hey, you never know. They're like playing pool and talking about particle physics. Her pseudonym is Sarah Wynde, and that's W-Y-N-D-E. So
W-Y-E-N-D?
No, W-Y-N-D-E. Wind.
Sarah Wynde.
Yeah. So,
oh, a gift of ghosts, a gift of
gift
thought.
Gift of ghosts, gift of thought, gift of time. Yep.
That is awesome.
She's like, so she's doing great. She goes and she talks about like self-publishing books at conferences and stuff. She seems very happy with what she's doing. So I've talked to her.
Is this a secret that she's Wendy Sharp?
I don't think so. Like, I should probably check with her, but I don't think it's a major secret. It's like
it's not a secret to Aaron Walter or Jim Hyde or Denise R. Jacobs. Now I'm on Sarah Wynde's Facebook page, and this is where the secret is
like,
out.
Like, yeah, no. So she does. So anyway, so I met Wendy. We got this book thing going, and then my book came out in 2010. And incidentally, at the same time, I went to South by Southwest 2010, and I was on the How to Rock South by Southwest panel.
Right.
Minjun Kim invited me, and it was like me and her and Binha and Jeremy Keith, and then a woman who does music and law, whose name I can't remember. Anyway,
music and what?
Music and law. She's like a lawyer.
Like the singing nun, only the singing lawyer?
Kind of, yeah.
We want 50% of your assets. 50% at least. Chris, 50.
So we were on that panel, and she was like, you know, I really wanted to make sure. She was like, I mean, it already kind of started off diverse because I'm going to be on there because she's Korean American. But she was just like, and then I've got you, and I got Ben. She's like, I got Jeremy as kind of like the token white guy.
They've always been great ever since I went there. They were always been like, I mean, they were talking of it was diversity has always been a very important value to them since like. As long as I've been going there, if you were putting a panel together and you said, I got these three white dudes to talk with me, they were like, no,
fair.
That's not going to work.
That's I remember the singing lawyer's name is Annie Lynn.
Annie Lynn.
Yeah. L-I-N.
Nice.
Yeah. So one of the things that struck me when I was at South by Southwest that year was kind of that South by Southwest was like kind of the only place where I felt like I was in a tech environment where there was diversity. I had, you know, the first year I went to the like Blogging While Black panel and met like all these like black bloggers and black folks in tech. And I was just like, oh my mm-hmm. God, like I'm not the only one.
Was Jay Brother Love on that panel?
Jay Brother Love was, I met him that year. I think he was on the panel. George, All About George.
Yep.
Lindy Johnson. Jason Tony, Tiffany B. Brown. So like we like all coalesced and like was just like a homecoming. It was so great. And then when I came, you know, again in 2010, it was just like, yeah, there still aren't enough. Like there's still like the fact that this is like an issue and that like Hugh Forrest, who's the organizer for South by Southwest, would like actually reach out to me and say, can you submit something? Because we just really want to have like more diverse stuff.
Something's needed because it's as a publisher, as a conference organizer, I'm mm-hmm. both those things. And you're constantly reaching out and feeling like there's not enough people. And why can't I find more people? It's a struggle. And I wonder if some of that is some inner voice telling people, no, I can't do this. It's not for me. I don't know.
Exactly. I don't know enough. I'm not popular. Who wants to listen to me? Blah, 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 blah. There's no space for me. I don't see anybody there who looks like me.
Right.
And then, you know, I was actually just telling my mother actually about how hard it is for some women. I have never had this problem. I don't know if I'm just lucky, like knock on wood, or if I just don't fit the profile of the women who have been kind of the targets of this kind of like online harassment stuff. But I know Anita Sarkeesian, I know Adria Richards, you know, I know women who have been like, I know Sarah Parmenter, you know, I know women who have been threatened, like very threatened and very targeted by people online, discredited from their authority and all this stuff. And what?
Yeah, like, if you know women who do things, then you know women who've been harassed.
Exactly.
And all women do things. So
yeah. And I actually, I haven't been harassed. So I'm like really lucky. Like, and so like universe, thank you. And we're just doing that. There's that whole range of either it's going to be dangerous or it's going to be scary or nobody looks like me or there's no place for me or
there's
who
also
wants to listen
socialization.
To what I say. Exactly.
I used to go to South by Southwest and men would fling themselves at me, not in a romantic way, but just you know, like, hey, I'd really like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Oops. I'd really like to talk at an event apart. And I'd be like, and sometimes they'd be like, I don't know who this person is. I've never heard of them. I don't know what contribution they've made. Not that there's anything wrong with it and not that they didn't have it, but I never had women doing that.
Mm.
And my partner also, you know, it wasn't just me. Like it was women seem less likely to put themselves forward. I hope that's changing. One of the reasons it might not be is because of the harassment issue that you're talking about. But I would ask women friends, like, half the people I work with are women, strangely enough, because half the people on Earth are women. And, you know, you'd say, hey, can you write for us, or can you come on stage? And there was incredible reluctance. And it's distressing.
It is distressing. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, there's a great quote by Nick Fink.
Right.
From an article from way back from 2006. I mean, it's not like this is a new topic or anything, but that he says, you know, I go to conferences and it's the same faces talking about the same things. Right. And there's no diversity, and there's no diversity of, because there's no diversity of people, there's no diversity of thought.
I generally agree. I don't think you can ever say anything as simple as that. I think you could have any two people, any color, any gender, whatever, who you could put two people who are the same in all those ways, and they'll be very different spirits, very different minds, very different creative, you know. Obviously, okay, so, you put two people in a family together at Thanksgiving and ask them about politics, and, you know, they fight and disagree because, you know, but yet those people are, you know, maybe the same gender, the same race, and so on. So it's not that simple, but the larger point is absolutely true. The larger point.
And I have probably over-exaggerated. He says literally, I quote, the same handful of speakers, few new faces, fewer new ideas, rarely anything new to learn. So it's not that there's no diversity of thought, but there's just less, right?
Right. No, absolutely. Totally agree with that. And listen, we're going to come right back to this and rock the web and what we can all do about it, but I have to, at this point, take a little break to thank our sponsors.
Okay.
Can you hang in there, Denise?
I'm hanging in there.
Okay. Today's Big Web Show is sponsored by Thinkful. They're a mentoring service where you can learn to build websites and apps in 3 months with HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and jQuery. This is one-on-one mentorship, you and another person. You'll build a job-ready portfolio, and there are many skill levels that you can have and learn from them. Examples of folks who might benefit from Thinkful are designers who want to learn code, beginners who want to be engineers, front-end people who want to become engineers, and so on. For 10% off, go to www.thinkful.com/bigwebshow. That's 10% off by going to thinkful.com/bigwebshow. You know, all those sounds can sound like after a while, you don't know what any of them mean. So I'm going to say it one more time. 10% off at thinkful.com/bigwebshow. Thank you, Thinkful. And let's talk about supporting good causes. And things that need to get better in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
Denise, you started as a web developer. Obviously, you wrote the CSS book. Now you're more of a evangelist for getting people on stage, getting people past their fears, getting people writing, and so on. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that you do that is through Rock the Web at rawktheweb.com. So we've talked so far about how to rock South by Southwest kind of was one impetus for doing this. What do you actually do on this website, and how can people use it?
Well, so it's in its kind of foundling stages right now. It's a passion project of mine, and what it's kind of turned out to be at the moment, it's not exactly what I would like it to be in its full... what's the word that I'm looking for?
Glory.
Expression. Yes. Glorious expression. But so right now
I understand that it's still in kind of an early launch phase, but, talk about, if you would, the way you approach the problem.
So like the way I approach the problem. So that's, I was going to get to that. So the way that I'm approaching the problem is this, that, and I want to give you a little bit of background before I go into that,
sure.
Which is, kind of the story that I was telling before was that once I started speaking, essentially, like basically after South by Southwest 2010, and then I spoke at the Future of Web Design in London. That was kind of like my first, I kind of considered my first big break into speaking in the industry, and then started speaking a lot more at a lot of conferences, and just increased over the years. But I still go to conferences, even now, where I am either one of a handful of people of color, and I'm like, even being liberal, I'm not even just saying like just people like black people of African descent. I'm talking about like pretty much everybody you could put in the pot.
Everybody not white.
Everybody not white, right? So I'm usually one of a handful of people of color, and I'm usually one of a handful of women. And there's been only a few instances where I spoke at a conference called Media Evolution, the conference, back in 2013. And they actually have an active practice of getting a lot of female speakers. And so their female speaker lineup was 52%. And then incidentally, their female attendee percentage was 52%. And they have found that for their audience, that has been actually commensurate. So the percentage of speakers has been completely commensurate, of female speakers has been completely commensurate with the number of female attendees percentage-wise, which is fascinating.
Right? Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, they wrote an article about it and everything. So I would go and I would just be like, seriously, like I know tons of people who could be speakers at this conference, you know, and I would go to conference. Of course, I would meet the other women speakers. Of course, I would meet the other people of color speakers. Like I would meet everybody. Right. And I'd be like, why aren't these people? Why am I at this conference and these people aren't? Why aren't there more? And then I would talk to conference organizers. I actually had a conversation, I think, with Jeremy Keith and with Andy Budd and like a few other people. And they were saying,
at Deconstruct.
No, this was at South
or
by
UX
Southwest.
London? Oh, South.
No, it was 2000. It was South by Southwest 2011 because I was trying to kind of see if this concept of Rock the Web had legs, because I was just like, you know, if you had a place where you could find a bunch of speakers who were talented, you know, accomplished speakers who were women and people of color, would you use it? Like, is that a problem for you to find those people? And they're like, it's totally a problem. It's so hard. Like we put effort into it, and it's work. It's difficult. And then a lot of people will decline, or they'll say, I don't know enough, or I don't, or I can't. And I was like, well, I think this is enough. So my thinking was,
and by the way, if in spite of your best efforts, you have to put on a not very diverse lineup at one thing, there will be people who criticize you, and it hurts when you're trying, because
right.
You know, yours is the lesser pain compared to the ostracized people. But still, it's like, wow, I'm really trying to do the right thing here. And it's people don't realize how tough this is.
And it is
so,
actually, it's
not
actually
to whine,
effort.
But yeah, it's
effort. And so I,
yeah,
so
and
I
it shouldn't be effort.
It.
It should just be what's out there. It
right.
should just be the way things are.
And that's what hit me when I talked to conference organizers and they said, it's hard to find these people. It is hard. Like I want to have a diverse lineup and I can't do it. Like, or it's effort. And so I thought, okay, it's a two-pronged problem, right? If these people, if the conference organizers can't find folks, then that means that there's a problem with how visible the people who can do it are, right?
Right. Right.
And so for me, then I said, oh, this is an issue of visibility. This is not that, you know, these people are bad and wrong and like racist and sexist and all this stuff. It's not that. It's that they don't know where to go, or they don't have the resources.
Where to look.
And then the people who can do it aren't able to be seen, you know, incidentally, right? Like the irony of it. I mean, I always say that's like ironic because people are like, I think I met you. I was like, yeah, because there's so many 6'1" black women running around tech conferences with short hair. Me. Okay. So I thought, okay, then I want to make it easy for people who are organizers to find these folks. And then I want to encourage the people who might have had any inkling that they're needed and that they're necessary and that they're valued and valuable, and give them the encouragement
to step up
and to make themselves more visible. So
that makes perfect sense.
So that's what it's really about. So right now, the form that Rock the Web is taking is kind of a very grassroots, you know, if I'm talking to people and they're like, well, no, I was thinking I might want to be a speaker. I'm like, do it. Okay. Like, I will help you. Like, who do you want me to connect you with? Like, where do you want to talk? I can connect you with this organizer. I can connect you with that organizer, whatever. Like, you know, if people want speaking coaching, I've started doing speaking coaching and working with people on a one-on-one basis to help them kind of get their speaking game together. And then I also just will, like, you know, occasionally right now I haven't really have a, I don't have a process in place for it exactly. But, when I have a CFP, I will put it out and I will promote it to people, and I'll actually even tag people like, hey, you know, you need to apply for this. Hey, you know, and I'll recommend people. Usually people will say, yeah, I'm really having trouble. If they, you know, invite me to speak to a conference, I'll be like, I have a list of people that I can give you.
I totally believe in the approach you're taking. It's the only thing I've ever done that's really worked. Mm-hmm. Grassroots, one-on-one, mm-hmm. pushing boulders up the hill. And what happens, I think, is that other people hear about it and go, yeah, I want to work on that. I want to help that. And hopefully there's some people listening to us now, or will be when the show is finished and, you know, goes up to iTunes, that say, yeah, I would like to help that. You know,
yeah, I mean, I would love to have help. I've had a couple of people last year say, what can I do? And I'm like, things. Like, there's so much.
There you go. Things.
You know, eventually I'd love it to be a situation where, I mean, I've seen this where people have really great intentions and then they kind of, it kind of dies off where, you know, there've been a couple of things where it's like, yeah, we're going to make a database of like all these speakers and stuff like that. And then, you know, it still exists, but it's like outdated and you don't know if these people are still speaking because you know that it was popular back in 2011. And
yeah, every volunteer thing I've worked on, the enthusiasm is so high before the work starts.
Right.
And then a smaller group stays enthusiastic through the first month, 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. And then it just keeps falling off and falling off and falling off. Mm-hmm. It's human nature. And not everybody who starts participating is gonna stick with it. And then, but you know, I'm still working with people 20 years later from the Web Standards Project. Right? I still, who gave so much to that. And mm-hmm. we're still in touch and, you know, they're still making change in our industry now in different ways.
Exactly. I mean, and I would also love, I mean, I would love to get, you know, funding. I would love to get sponsorships with, I know that there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of companies that support these kind of initiatives and stuff like that. And so, you know, it would be great to have somebody who could be able to pursue that sort of thing, like actually get the conversations going. And
so
and
you need it may be that a strategic advisor who works with nonprofits mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. who's listening to the show might be a good person to talk to you.
It would be fantastic.
Today's Big Web Show is sponsored by Mandrill. Mandrill from MailChimp is a scalable, reliable, and secure email infrastructure service. It started as an idea in 2010 and became reality in 2012, and it's made up of a crew of MailChimp's best engineers. They may have gone through Thinkful's mentorship, I don't know. Mandrill is now the largest email as a, that was a not a very good joke, that was like an uncle joke. Mandrill is now the largest email as a service platform on the market with more than 300,000 active customers. You can use Mandrill to send automated one-to-one email like password resets and welcome messages, as well as marketing emails and customized newsletters, which is pretty cool if you have any kind of business you need to do that stuff. Mandrill is quick to set up, easy to use, and ridiculously stable. They made it for developers who love documentation, integrations, high delivery rates, webhooks, and analytics. If you're not comfortable with code and APIs, they recommend finding someone who is before getting started. This is the kind of people they are. They're telling you, they're giving you caveats about why you might not want their service if you're inexperienced in the midst of a sales message. But that's like, that's MailChimp, the honesty of those people. Okay, MailChimp's Mandrill. comes with a beautiful interface, flexible template options, custom tagging, and advanced tracking and reports. Mandrill is the only email infrastructure service with a mobile app that lets you monitor delivery and troubleshoot from wherever you are. So if something goes wrong and you're on the go, that's not a problem. It's also powerful, scalable, and affordable, but you don't have to take my word for it. Go sign up at mandrill.com with promo code 5x5, and you'll receive 50,000 free email sends per month for your first 6 months of service. Let me just say that again. Go to mandrill.com with promo code 5x5 to receive 50,000 free email sends per month for your first 6 months of service. So thank you to Mandrill for supporting 5x5 and The Big Web Show. Denise, we are running low on time, but I just wanted to ask you, what's next for Rock the Web?
So what's next is that I want to get the word out more. I want to encourage more people to speak. I want to also potentially get some of my ideas off of the ground. So
I encourage folks to help.
Yeah,
with this effort. I want to stay in touch with Denise.
Yeah.
And I hope that people listening who've been maybe afraid to get up and speak or afraid to write will think about doing it, because our medium needs your voice. Our community needs your voice. We need to speak to each other.
Exactly.
And with that, I'm going to thank Denise Jacobs for enlightening and sharing time with us today. You can find Denise at Denise Jacobs on Twitter. It's
right.
At Denise Jacobs. You can find her at denisejacobs.com.
Yes.
You can find her at, and her mission at, rocktheweb.com. And you can help to change the face of this industry. So thanks very much. Thank you also to Thinkful and Mandrill. And yes, also you can go to Rock the Web on Twitter. So rocktheweb.com, Rock the Web on Twitter. And thanks, Denise. Thanks, everybody. See you on the next Big Web Show.
Thank you, Jeffrey.